Stock Eliminator to the lanes. We need Stock Eliminator to the lanes.
Welcome, everybody, to the Class Racing Podcast with Aaron and Chuck. Introducing your host, RaceToolsDirect.com's own Aaron Allison and the Cobra Jet flying Charlie Downing, better known as Chuck.
This podcast is proudly presented by Race Tools Direct, your source for all of your racing tools and equipment needs. Visit racetoolsdirect.com or call 440-941-8533 to order today.
All right, welcome to the Class Racing Podcast, episode number 27. And this week we've got, as always, Charlie Downing, and we also have Mike.
How you doing, Mike, guys?
D.
Mikey D, are you quarantined as well, Mike?
Yeah, I guess I'm being legal. I'll say that, Charlie. How about that?
Well, that's good, man. It's always good to be legal, I think.
All right, so this year, in 2020, we added Mike Delaney a little bit to Mike actually came to me and Charlie at, when was that, the PRI show, I think.
Yep.
Said he was talking about doing a podcast and really wanted to focus on, some of the legends of the sport, some of the guys that had been around that had, maybe some of them that were still racing, but a lot of them that weren't racing anymore, but it had a, a great impact on the sport. And, Charlie and I thought it was a great idea, and we said, it's hard for Charlie and I to have an episode every single week. It'd be great if we could get some of these episodes to kind of add in and kind of keep more content for you guys. So we decided to kind of partner up, and, Mike's done a great job hitting the ground running, and you've done, probably, four or five so far this year, maybe more?
So we've got three, let me think here. Three done. The first one was Jim Waldo. Then we did Rock and Jenny Running. Dave and Ben Wenzel. I just finished Cal Method. I've got one going now with Jack McCormick, and I've got a long wish list of other people to go after. So I'm hoping during this downtime here, while we're all in quarantine jail, that just spend some time on the phone and get a couple more done.
Awesome. Well, I can tell you that the feedback that I've received and I know the feedback that you guys have received has been really excellent on them. So, keep the feedback coming. If there's somebody you'd definitely like to hear about, either on kind of the regular podcast or more of the Legends interview style, definitely let us know. We'll add them to the list. But it's been a lot of fun for Mike, I know. It's been a lot of fun for all of the listeners kind of getting to know some of these legends of the sport. So, but I thought Mike, Mike, I've gotten to know you pretty well, racing in Division III over the last, 5-10 years. But Mike, why don't you, for those of you in the country that I guess don't know Mike as well, Mike, why don't you give us a little bit of history on, how you got into racing, how long you've been racing, maybe a little bit about your current car. Just kind of fill us in. If somebody didn't know Mike Delaney at all.
Well, I grew up in South Jersey. As a kid, I used to go to ATCO, Cecil County. Used to go down and watch, back then when they AFX cars, the funny cars, Super Stock Nationals, that type of stuff. But I really took a liking right away to, the Stockers and the Super Stockers. The weekly programs there were just huge with some of the toughest cars in the country running every week. So my first race car was a 66 Chevy 396 325. G-stock automatic car, and I ran that car for a long time. Moved from New Jersey to Michigan. Had one of the old Cutlasses back in the 80s. Ran that in stock, super stock. Took some time off. Went go-kart racing with my son for about 10 years. Had no intentions of getting back into it, but I was on eBay one night and saw this G-stock automatic Max Wedge car, and it winked at me, and that was it. So that's what I've got now. And actually, the car was built back in the 80s out in Salt Lake City, Division 6 car, by Royce Virgin. And the car still looks the same, pretty much the same paint. I just updated it, and that's where I've been.
Now, how long ago was that you bought the A-Stock automatic car?
I bought that in 2005. So that's the longest time I've had any race car ever. But I tell you, it's my favorite car. It's just, you know, it's the cars I grew up with, and they're just cool cars. You don't see them much in the track anymore. It's a really good, it's a good bracket car, real consistent. Certainly not the fastest car in the class, but, you know, for putting a number on the window and going around, it's a good car.
Now, which combination is that?
So I've got the high horsepower, what they call the Stage 3. It's the same, I think, I don't know if Juan's running that or not, but Shaw runs that, so it's the higher horsepower, rated 421 horse.
Okay, nice. And you can run A stock automatic and also double A, right?
Yep. So that, and then, you know, back in the 80s, for a couple of years, we started the Great Lakes Stock Superstock Association. Ran that for a couple of years. Then it went dormant. And then, you know, with a lot of help from Charlie and Brad Zaskowski, you know, those guys helped, and we got the thing going again. And what's this, be the fifth year, you think, Charlie, that we're running it?
Yeah, I would say we're fourth or fifth year running it. You know, it's just with IHR going kind of to the wayside about that time, you know, a bunch of us in Michigan, you know, Brad, myself, Zach running, Kevin, you know, Eric Stewart, you know, we all are like, man, we used to do these IHR races, you know, with Martin, Stanton, Milan, Norwalk, the old 42. And, you know, we just said, man, Mike's got this thing going already. You know, we ought to pitch in, help him a little bit and make this thing, you know, a little bit better for everybody. You know, get a little more help and get a little more, you know, participation out of it. So
yep,
it's turned into pretty good. I think we're averaging 40, 45 cars, you know, now, and I'd say we got a pretty good following.
I tell you, it's really benefited from all the heavy lifting that you and Brad have done.
So, no, it's been a good deal, and it's been fun, too. I mean, it's been, you know, everybody's kind of laid back. Nobody kind of takes charge, but it's more like a, you know, 3 to 5 guys at every race. Kind of everybody just picks something that they do, and everybody's pretty good at their aspect of it. And it works for us.
How many cars did you guys have at the 42 race? Was that the year before last? That was part of the high point?
I think on Saturday, I think we had like 88, and then we had a bunch of breaks and stuff, and I think on Sunday it dropped off about 15 cars because of just the extreme hot weather, and, you know, guys were just, you know, kind of burned out. You know, we raced pretty much, we finished, heck, what was it, 10, 11 o'clock at night on Saturday?
Yep.
Yeah, I went to that race, and I can say that's probably one of the cooler stock superstock races I've ever been to. I mean, it was like almost like a, I don't know, it was we were kind of like the main event of the track to some extent, right? There was some other stuff going on, but it was definitely the main thing, and it was there wasn't a lot of other classes. There were just a few other classes, and it was a pretty cool event.
Yeah, I think if we could get, you know, if the dates is ever aligned, if we could get together with a couple of associations at the right place, you could have a lot of cars.
Yeah, and the other thing, you know, that I really liked about that race is there was probably, I would say, 10 to 15 cars that I've never seen at, like, an IHRA race. And there was a couple guys that I haven't seen since the IHRA days. Like, for example, John Lovins was at that race. And,
right,
you know, he used to race with us back in the day at every race, but I bet you I hadn't seen him in 5 years. It was great to catch up with him. And then there was quite a few cars, like I said, that I'd never seen. They were just cool stock superstock cars that, you know, guys can get out and go to an association race without maybe having a license or out having memberships. Or, you know, it's a little bit less low key on the, you know, money spent up front, and kind of brings out some cars that maybe a guy comes out once or twice a year.
Yeah, I agree, man. I kind of like having the nostalgia superstock guys with us because, like you said, it just brings out a different group of people.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, that's, you know, you get, if you run, you know, whatever series you run, if you run NHRA Division 3 or 1 or your division or, you know, the national series, you kind of get going with the same people all the time. And that's great. You know, it's a good family atmosphere. You get friends and you kind of get to know everybody. But, you know, I'm a car guy. I'm a race car guy, just like you guys are. And when I get to see some other cars, especially other stock superstock cars that I maybe haven't seen before, that's kind of refreshing. That's always fun.
You know, one of the great things about the way those things are run, when they run everything on the one day, it's amazing how darn close the racing is. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Guys, good lights, you know, head on. And, you know, when you can run round after round, you know, within an hour each other, it makes for some really good racing.
Yeah, I agree. I think in that Saturday night, I got down to three or four cars, whatever the semis was, with my Cavalier. And got beat by a wagon, a stalker, kicked my butt. I don't remember exactly what happened, but it was good, a lot of good racing all day long. All right, Mike, the only thing you didn't kind of talk about your background that I think is very interesting is maybe, you know, kind of why you moved from Jersey to Michigan and then your involvement kind of in the, you know, in the big three and kind of where you ended up in the motorsports side. Why don't you brief everybody on that a little bit?
Yeah, so believe it or not, I actually started with American Motors, AMC, back in 1976. Got transferred to Detroit in 77. Had a lot of different jobs, you know, inside the company. Purchasing, product planning, finance. One of the coolest jobs I ever had was I was the spy for the company, competitive intelligence. I got paid to go to auto shows all around the world and read car magazines all day. It was great. But eventually ended up working on the NASCAR program at Dodge, and that kind of sparked, you know, the whole idea of the legends, because you know you meet all these great people and you hear all these great stories. And, I mean, Aaron and Charlie, you both know this. I mean, you guys have been around when you were young with your dads, and you've met all these great people along the way. They've got these great stories. And as they get along in age, they, you know, some of these stories have to be preserved. But anyway, back to just a quick close out, you know, where I ended up. So, you know, during the tough times in 08, you know, Dodge pretty much shut down the NASCAR program. I had a great opportunity to retire early from Chrysler. I knew Brian Wolf at Ford Racing, and he got a hold of me right at that time and said, hey, I need some help. And I went over to and worked at Ford Racing. Spent a lot of time in short track racing, developing their crate engine program. And then the last 2 years, I was working on the drag racing program. So pretty nice way to round out your career, actually, you know, getting paid to stand at a racetrack and do what you love to do.
Yeah, I mean, for those guys that don't know Brian Wolf, man, I mean, he's basically the guy that got the, you know, the factory showdown cars, Copa cars, you know, Cobra Jet Mustang. That whole program basically started because of Wolf, I would say.
You know, that's true.
Drag pack, you know, he was kind of the first one to get the Cobra Jet program rolling and but they start in 06, 07, kind of talking about it, and then 08, they finally got it up and going. And, you know, now it is today what it is today. Basically, I would say mostly because of him.
You know? Agreed, 100%.
Yeah, for sure. Well, definitely a pretty cool career, and sounds like you've raced Chevys, Oldsmobiles. Never raced a Ford, though, doesn't sound like, right?
No, I'm always one car company off. You know, when I worked at AMC and Chrysler, I was fooling around with all kinds of GM stuff. Then right as I left Chrysler, I finally got a Chrysler car. And then all the time at Ford, I was still fooling around with the Chrysler stuff. So who knows? There's still plenty of time left. I may end up in a Ford.
You got time. It doesn't sound like you're in a big hurry to give up that Mopar, but
you know, the one thing I find out, and you guys know this, it's amazing. These guys that are in their 70s are still really good. And there's lots of time left.
I agree. No, I agree. You got guys like, you know, Bob Marshall and, you know, and I can't think of it right this second, but there's several guys in their 70s. Ben Winslow. I mean, those guys are still pretty good and competitive. Gary Russell.
Look at Gary Russell. He's amazing.
You know, yeah. He's not killer every single lap, but I'll tell you what, he about 2 years ago, he kicked my butt. I mean, he can lay down some laps.
He can lift a stick.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of guys, you know, 65 to 80 that are still, you know, Brad and I were talking about this the other day, you know, I mean, just in Division III, I mean, you line up, you know, Wiki just won that points meet up there in, was it South Georgia, Orlando, one of those two.
Yeah, he's tough.
You know, he's always tough. I mean, he's been tough the last 10, 15 years. I mean, ever since he got that car, you know, he's always been a player. And then, you know, Bob Marshall, same thing. You know, Dan Olding's probably one of the most underrated, you know, guys that are retired in a car. We don't see him very much, but he comes to our stock, super stock races. And it seems like, I would say, out of four or five races, he's in the semifinal at least two or three times a year. You know, he just doesn't have time to go racing, you know, like he did 10, 15 years ago. But, I mean, he'll wear Brad and I and Zach and Kevin. He'll wear guys out, man, for a guy that's in his upper 60s.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so you said, Mike, that this week was Cal Method. Why don't you give us a little preview of the Cal Method podcast we're going to put out next here?
Yeah, well, you know, Cal, I think everybody's known Cal's been around for a long time, but, you know, until I spent some time talking to him, I talked to Cal for over 2 hours. The guy, number one, the guy's an amazing storyteller, and he has got a memory that is just astounding. He can remember ETs from decades ago. So, Cal's coming up next. I mean, between he and Marianne, his wife, they've won, I think it was like, they've been in the final, I think it was 72 times, NHRA National and points races. Marianne won the TRW All-Star race in 95. Cal set, I think, between Cal, John McLaughlin, his partner, and Marianne, over 200 NHRA national records. It's amazing. The guy is just amazing. And, you know, doing it from all the way in the far corner of the United States, telling his stories about getting to the races, you know, all this, the trials and tribulations, very entertaining. So there's going to be 2 one-hour episodes. There's a lot of content, but it's good, rich content.
No, yeah, I'm very excited to hear this. You know, we've asked, you know, a lot of different people, hey, who do you want to hear on the podcast, et cetera, et cetera. And Cal's name probably comes up more than anybody. So I'm glad we got him on here. And the other thing that Mike, you sent me here in the intro, is that him and Marianne were in 72 NHRA National Divisional Final Rounds.
Yes.
72. Yes. I don't know that I've gone to 72 races in my career. I mean, that's just crazy.
And that stat's even more crazier because when you look at when those guys in Marianne started racing, there wasn't 24 or 22 national events. There was 12 national events, you know, and a handful of points meets. So, I mean, you look at it today, you know, we can hit, you know, three or four national events. You know, we've got Indy, Chicago, Norwalk, St. Louis, and we can hit five or six national events within, you know, 500 miles. I mean, for Cal and Chuck Norton, those guys on the West Coast that ran back then, you basically had two Pomona races out there, and then you were going to the east of Mississippi for everything else. You know, the Gators, Indy, Columbus, you know, Brainerd, the Cajuns, you know, Maple Grove, Englishtown. You know, that's what's really crazy about it when you think of, you know, Cal's success back then is the amount of seat time he had, you know, every year, you know, coming back east. And all those guys in California back then.
Yeah. So, well, that'll be very exciting. Very much looking forward to that. We will release those probably over the next week or two, week and a half. So while you guys are all sitting at home or some of you not working, unfortunately, with the coronavirus that's come down the country, make sure you take a listen to the Cal Method Legends podcast. Another thing we just wanted to briefly talk, Charlie, why don't you tell them about the Paul Cotton article that came out this week.
So I just happened to be cruising through the internet yesterday, and I saw Dave Hakeem, who's a stock, super stock racer. You know, he raced for Jack McCormick. He worked at Federal Mogul. A lot of guys have been around the, you know, the drag strip and stuff. We've seen Dave work for a lot of different people and media companies. He did a real nice article on Paula and Mike Cotton. If you guys want to check that out, it's dodgegarage.com.
is where that article is. And it's just really a nice article on the two of them and how they've raced together and stayed together and just kind of their career. And, you know, we all know Mike and Paul and really good people. Just, you know, if you got some time when you're sitting at home, check out that article. It's just a really good read, I think.
Yeah, and I'll post a link on the Facebook page if you guys have trouble finding it. All right, so one thing that just wanted to briefly talk about, you know, it's all over the news, and don't want to spend too much time on it, but, you know, the coronavirus, I think we should at least talk about it a little bit and, you know, kind of focus more on how it pertains to racing, what the effect will be, you know, how we can best get back to racing, that sort of thing. You know, I think NHRA was pretty proactive, you know, along with all of the other major sports and events in the country. But they put a 30-day ban on all racing in NHRA facilities and or NHRA sanctioned tracks. I know there was some ambiguity and kind of gray area on that, you know, if a track was, you know, what's any trace sanctioned event actually mean? Is it just national events points mean? Is it really, you know, any event at the track? And it seems like it's pretty much any track that's any trace sanctioned is not supposed to be racing. And that so, was, that went out March 16th and currently is scheduled to end April 16th.
So, what I heard on that is anybody that's under NHRA's insurance policy, which is part of being a member track, they have to follow that guideline if they want to keep their insurance, which is the only reason to be a member track if you're not hosting a big, you know, NHRA national event or points meet. The insurance, I guess, is pretty good. So I'm going to go out on a limb. Today's what, the 21st?
23rd.
23rd. I'm going to say that this does not get lifted till the first, till after Memorial Day. You know, we talked to a couple guys out and about. I don't, you know, NASCAR looks like they're already stuck out to what, May 1st, May 2nd. That, I would be really shocked, you know, with the numbers still going up the way they are, the testing. You know, we're going to see a 30-day ban on motorsports until this number flattens out. And I think once the number flattens out and goes down, they'll issue another, the final 30 days, hopefully, and that'll be your middle number, which, to be honest, I really wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't until after 4th of July, which I hate to say that because that's, you know, 90 days from now, but realistically, I don't think it's that far of a gamble.
Yeah, no, I agree. I know that Bill Bader did a, you know, the owner and president of Norwalk Raceway Park in Ohio here. He did a Facebook Live this afternoon. Also, I think pretty good to maybe catch that, you know, and he talked a lot about it. I think from kind of listening to that and reading through the lines, I think I wouldn't be surprised if NHRA comes out in the next week and kind of pushes that date out another month and a half. I think the April 16 date is definitely not going to happen just for everything else that's going on. And obviously, I think that's the right thing to do for the country.
Yeah, and don't forget in you know Ohio Valley, Columbus, Cincinnati, you know, all those tracks are under 2 foot of water right now. So, you know, those tracks aren't going to open up till you know 1st of May, best case scenario. I talked to a couple guys that were around 70 and that around trails, and they said it looks way worse than it did in 87 or whenever they had that giant flood there in the summertime. They said the only thing you can see is basically the tower. Everything at the whole place is underwater.
Yeah, I saw some pictures of trails, and actually out on 70, the U.S. or you know the highway out there was actually underwater, and it was pretty crazy. It looked like the track was definitely in bad shape. But yeah,
which really kind of stinks, man, because not only are these guys going to have, you know, the added cost, you know, to fix these facilities, but you're not going to have any income now for, you know, maybe till the summertime. So it's really kind of a double-edged sword for a lot of these facilities, you know, like this is the track at Cincinnati, which probably wasn't in the best shape financially anyways, especially with new owners, you know, and now you got to go through and do all this and not collect any money at the gate for, you know, an added amount of time in your, you know, prime season. So,
Yeah, I mean, and last year, you know, it was a very rainy season. A lot of local tracks, at least here in the Midwest, had a pretty bad year. And this year is not looking like a real good moneymaker for having a racetrack either. So definitely unfortunate. You know, the one thing I just want to say about the coronavirus is, you know, my wife's in public health, got some good friends there in the nursing and things like that. And I think that, you know, a lot of people that I've seen in the United States are just not taking this thing very serious. And I think the best way for all of us to get back to work, back to racing, back to enjoying sports on TV, et cetera, is to band together, stay at home, do the right thing, and get this behind us. You know, I talked just a few hours ago, I was talking to a friend in the Los Angeles area, and they've been under a ban for what, a couple of days, right, Mike?
Yep.
I think since late last week. And he said he went golfing on Saturday, and it's not like California and LA, at least where he's at, is like nothing even happened. Talking to some people down south, I've heard that, you know, kind of down south where they've not gotten hit as hard as some of these northern cities like, Detroit, Chicago, New York. I know Ohio's gotten hit in some areas. Sounds like down south, it's, very much business as usual. So I guess just my thing would be, look, you know, do the right thing, stay home, do what the government's telling us. And I think that'll be the best way to get through this and get back to racing.
Agreed. It's kind of like everybody, let's observe the speed limit and we're all going to be better off.
Yeah, I mean, more note, you know, stock super sad guys, you know, we've had kind of one person I've heard affected from it, you know, him and his son, Dave and Louis Conti.
Yeah.
They're both in the hospital right now with it. So keep them guys in your prayers and, you know, Judy and all them. It's a pretty tough time. You know, I heard Judy was in a rehabilitation center and she's got pneumonia. And then Dave and Louie are both on respirators, I guess. So,
as of yesterday, they were both on ventilators in critical, you know, kind of very serious condition. So definitely keep them prayers in. And, you know, I'm sure they won't be the last, you know, in the kind of the racing community that gets hit with this, unfortunately. So, another thing I just wanted to mention a little bit, Mike, you know, Michigan's under a ban now, I think, as of tonight. Ohio is. What have you guys seen? Have you guys seen any difference just kind of being out and about at all?
I mean, I've noticed just over the last week or so. I mean, there's a significant reduction just in traffic. Most of your retail stores are closed. But the good news is that, I mean, the food stores are it's, you know, produce is really good. Meat's coming back on the shelf. So, I mean, there's good,
yep,
good signs. You know, early today they announced the stay-at-home order here in Michigan. So I figured, I'm running to Home Depot. I'm buying paint. I'm gonna paint some rooms. And at the line waiting to get paint mixed was really long, and I was talking to the Home Depot guy. He said we've had record sales on paint. They're having a lot of paint, so there'll be a lot of housing improvement projects done here in the next couple of weeks.
No, I think that's for sure. Well, you know, stay at home, get those race cars ready to go, get them polished up Jeff Donna style, and you know, get those garage cleaned up. If you need any tools, Race Tools Direct, we're still shipping as long as FedEx is in operation. But you know, stay home and do the best you can to help end this as soon as possible. All right, so next thing, we did have some racing just a few short weeks ago before the ban. So let's talk some race results. Let's. What do you want to start, guys? Bell Rose?
Yeah, I might as well run
on
down the list. You know, where do you want to start? You want to start with automatic horsepower, or you want to start with results?
your call, Charlie. You let us.
we might as well end with automatic horsepower. You guys do the results, and I'll pick up the piece.
All right. Well, I'll start with Superstock. We had Brandon Bakies over RJ Sled, and you know, Brandon was 0-13 on the tree, 6 over. It looks like RJ was quite a bit over the Dow. It looks like he couldn't quite run the number, was 11 over. But it was 30 up front, so definitely good. Both had good lights, and that was actually Brandon's first Lucas Oil Wally, which kind of surprised me because he's you know, I feel like in the last few years, you know, we're talking about him more and more, and he definitely goes a lot of rounds down to D4. So I'm surprised that's his first win, but congrats to Brandon for the first win in Superstock.
Yeah, that caught my eye, too, because he does go a lot of rounds, both in stock and super stock.
Yeah, I think he's got two top tens, I think, you know, whether it's the Copo or the Oldsmobile. You know, he always seems to be a late-round contender. You know, him and I raced at Gainesville last year, I think, in round two. And, you know, we were both 20. I think I was one above, and he was dead on four, and I was going home. So, I mean, he's a tough competitor.
Yeah, I mean, in six rounds, he was between 003 and 25. And most of his lights were, I bet you his average is mid to low teens. So he was definitely hitting the tree well and deserved the win down there at Bell Rose to kick off the D4 season. What about stock, Mike?
So stock, right?
Yep.
Okay. Will Hale. I don't know him. Charlie, who's Will Hale?
You got me. I've never heard of him before. I mean, I know that's pretty crazy, but that's a new one to me.
Can't help you.
Okay, and Laporte.
Sammy and Kent Laporte, I've known forever, him and his dad. But yeah, I mean, he's kind of, I don't even know. I saw that, and I thought, you know, I thought it was relation to Jim Hale at first when I first looked at it, but I don't think that's correct.
Right, Division 4 car, not Division 5.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I don't know him either, but minus his 62 light in round 5. He was quite good. I mean, started off at 36-31, then was 008, 001, and 24 in the final. So he drove a really good race. You know, looks like Kent was pretty decent getting to the final. In the final, it looks like he slacked off a little bit and missed it, but
yeah, I mean, Kent was kind of, you know, it looked like he was a little, I'm going to say, I'll go out on a limb and say it, you know, he was a little lackluster in the reaction time department, you know, 76, 95, 64, those normally don't get it done.
True.
You know, 36, you know, that was his best light of the day, you know, 47, and then 89, I mean, just kind of right place, right time for Kent Laporte, it looks like. You know, just kind of making up for the automatic horsepower he took for the class win.
He had the car dialed, though. I mean, look at the. I mean, if you look at his.
Oh yeah,
GT,
yeah, he did.
He had it right out. You know, dead on 3-1 over. You know, in the final, I don't know if he just, you know, misdialed it. I mean, he's down a little bit of mile an hour for a J car, but not a ton. You know, he dialed it. He missed it by 6 in the final, which is, you know, a little rough. He can tighten that up even at 89. He might even be able to sneak away with it. To be honest. I mean,
yeah.
H car going 114, he ain't killing 3 mile an hour top, you know.
Yeah, it looks like
15. I mean,
looks like both cars were a little slow. You know, sometimes you see the finals where the dial ends are a little off. Sometimes you know, you get hot lap, and then before the final, there's a big wait.
Yeah, in Belrose, you know, last time we raced there, you know, if you get in the middle of the day, that place does some goofy stuff. It's hard to see the tree there in one lane. I've got some time slips there that I look at it and I just go, it doesn't add up, and just kind of throw it in the box and forget about it. So it could be something like that.
Yeah. Now, Charlie, you're the class expert on the team here. They ran class at this point to me, right?
So this is NHRA, the new NHRA's. I don't know what you would call this idea, I guess. We saw it last year, the baby Gators, you know, running class at points meets. So NHRA decides, well, you know, let's try it at a couple other places, you know. So this is basically, instead of running it at a 3-day national at Houston and hustling everybody around, they ran it at the Belrose points meet, which I actually don't mind that. Belrose got a little bit of room. You don't have to worry about grading points for the guys in Division 4 that, you know, Houston only taking 50 cars. Not a bad idea. You know, they're going to do the same thing in Dallas in the fall with, you know, Super Stock. And then, you know, the baby Gators was both stock and Super Stock. And then the same thing with Vegas if they ever rerun that deal.
Okay, so they just ran stock class, correct?
Correct.
Okay, yeah, that makes more sense. I guess I didn't know about the Houston swap. I kind of wondered why it was just stock, but that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, so like Dallas, instead of doing both of them there, they split them up. You know, so Dallas will be super stock only and Houston stock only, so they're around that at Noble, Oklahoma, I think.
Yeah, but the deal is that there's only, as I understand it, and Charlie helped me out here, I think races like Bella Rose and like Blank Brainerd where they run class, there's no contingency.
No contingency. NHRA gave us a big screwing on that when they came out with that class championship deal. And they said, oh, we're going to, you know, pay out, you know, one winner in each category, automatic stick, you know, same with stock and super stock.
Yep.
Well, then the guy running that, you know, did a lackluster job, so they just did away with that program. But what they did do is they did away with that program and the contingency that was supposed to go with it.
Right.
So now they just said, well, we're going to pay class at the Gators. We're going to pay class at Indy. And somewhere in two other races. I think it's a Fall Vegas and Columbus.
Correct.
Yeah. So
which is I don't know. I don't really agree with it, but you know, it's just part of the, you know, I don't know.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. I think it kind of takes away from some of the stuff. There's no reason we can't go back to the way it was, you know, or. And I don't even mind, you know, doing away with the class single and letting the guys keep running the combo and, you know, make it to where it only pays, you know, $150 or $200 every time. I mean, there's no money in it anyways. Even if the four races, the max you can win is about $400.
Right. All right, well, it seems like Bell Rose is a pretty good race to kind of kick off the season, pretty well attended. Class seemed to be a big hit. Seemed like there was quite a few guys from up north that kind of went down to run class, and being the week before, you know, kind of the Gainesville week, seems like there was quite a few people that kind of made that full trip. So let's move on to the Baby Gators. Oh, wait, Charlie, you didn't talk about the horsepower.
All right, so we had 3 horsepower hits at Bell Rose because the air was, you know, ridiculously fast, and you know. Some people didn't realize it was going to be that fast. First one was the 350 90-92 Camaro, which had been Kent LaPorte. That went from 272 to 281, so I got 9. 2-ton, that's just an underpowered, you know, drag pack. I mean, it should be 400 horse. It was rated at 340. Now it's 369. And the 352 stick car at 285. It went to 303 after a 130-600 run. You know, everybody saw the air was fast, this and that. But, I mean, you look at those cars, you know, they all needed horsepower, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure. There were some other cars that were pretty close, right, if it hadn't gone mine shaft.
Yeah, you know, them guys, the guys that got horsepower, they were kind of bitching a little bit. You know, they're like, well, it's not fair. You know, in mineshaft, you know, they should raise the 120 number up to like 125 or 130. And, you know, yeah, I understand that, but let's get serious here. I mean, let's take Bill Dyer's combination. You know, if you look at that combo in an automatic car, it's 370-some horsepower. It was 285 with a stick. I mean, we can change all these rules, you know, to make it a little fairer. This, but at the end of the day, all three of these combinations need horsepower. I mean,
right.
2-ton car, you know, the 350 Camaro probably was one that's a little tougher. But, I mean, you know, that's part of the game. Last time I checked is, you know, you got to run hard to get to Wally. I mean, that's what the whole thing's all about. You know, if you don't want to play the game or the chess match, you know, sandbag and, you know, set your car up to go 115 and make the guy in the other lane do it. You know, it's all about choices.
Yeah, and I think it's a good thing for the sport. I mean, you know, with Indy now being the fact that it's really hard, you can't get horsepower at Indy, right? I mean, how it's been the last couple of years.
Well, and hopefully that'll change. I know that the guys on the committee have really complained about that. There's two guys at NHRA that, you know, don't really understand stock and super stock, but yet they're kind of in charge. You know, I think if you took a vote, I would say probably 75% of the guys would want, you know, automatic horsepower and all that enforced at Indy. You know, when you got a guy that spent a lot of money and he's got a 115 under car, and you take a combination, I'm just going to pick on two-ton here, you know, like the 910, you know, not drag pack, but the Dodge Challenger 370, you know, rated at that time at 340 or whatever. I mean, you take that combination in B or C or A and compare it to a, you know, 69 Camaro 396 375 horse. I mean, it's really kind of a joke, you know, and then he can go out there and go, you know, 140 under with, you know, nowhere near the amount of R&D and research and what some of these other guys have, and they're not even a player. So.
Good. Well, that wraps up the horsepower. I think it's good in general for the sport to get a little horsepower here and there. And, you know, good air obviously sometimes brings that out. So, baby gators. And now, Charlie, let's talk about your – before we kind of get into the baby gators, since you only made really the first day there, why don't you talk about your personal baby gator experience?
Well, I had probably one of my quickest trips to Florida known to man. We put a new engine in my Cobra Jet, got everything going basically Monday before that. You know, got it running, everything looked good. Went down there and we just ran into a bunch of problems, ended up leaving Friday morning, you know, at 5 o'clock in the morning. So made two runs, it was way off what it should have been. We tested a couple things. You know, we weren't sure if they were gonna work. You know, Jimmy that does my engines, you know, we talked about it before I left and he says, you know, I think it's gonna work, you know, but this is kind of a test deal. You know, if it had been the middle of summertime, you know, we could have gone to Milan or Stanton or Martin, tested and found out this, but, you know, I was kind of wanting to go to Florida. I tried to go there every year and Brad and Bill and those guys were there. And, you know, it wasn't one of my smarter decisions, but, you know, I've gotten away with it before putting new stuff in and trucking 1,000 miles and it seemed to work out. This is just one of the times I got caught where it didn't. So just, you know, you'll have that if you race enough. I mean, you'll make some trips that are you should have just been better off to stay home. So,
no, I mean, I think it's a good example. I think a lot of people, you know, that maybe are just getting into racing or look at some of the stuff and they see, you know, they maybe have some struggles or some problems as they're kind of getting going, and they, you know, they look online, they see all these guys going fast and doing this stuff, and I think, you know, the story that you just told about driving, you know, 1,000 miles and turn around and driving back the next night. Like that doesn't get told very often. There's no, that doesn't get on social media. That's not, you know, and I think, you know, sometimes you think when you're trying to put a race car together the night before and you have all kind of problems that like, man, I have the worst luck. What we do is hard. And I think everybody can tell a couple stories like that where, you know, they have trouble or they have struggles. And they have, you know, maybe learned a valuable lesson, you know, type of deal. But I think that is why it's so rewarding when you have success in this sport, right? If it was really easy, I don't think it'd be near as rewarding. So.
No, and I'll agree to that. I mean, you know, you know, 15 years ago, we put an engine in the old station wagon and, you know, everything was brand new and loaded it up and I didn't even have it running, and back when Craig Marshall and I were going everywhere when we were both single and, you know, running around the country, you know, went over to the shop over there, and him and I and Leonard put it in, you know, before we left, and, you know, went down there, and everything went, you know, as smooth as could be, you know, I mean, went 110 under in one class, you know, everything was good, and my dad, he always, you know, he'd laugh, because he said, you know, that'll never happen again, you know, you're going to, you know, you do stuff like that, you're going to get caught, you know. We did it a couple other times, you know, and we've gotten away with it. So, I mean, it just kind of, all of our good luck just kind of caught up with us on this one, which, you know, it's going to happen.
I'm sure you got some stories too, Mike, where you maybe had some bad luck.
I mean, that's inherent, isn't it? I mean, you know, Charlie, I can't top that one, though. But
I think I got one that can top that. Don Holden may, you know, he may nudge me. When I first started racing, we were going to the Northern Nationals with Don Holden, and I was about 18 or 19 years old. And we're in the truck, and we went and worked on – he's letting me drive his Firebird. And we worked on that thing for 2 days at his house, getting it ready. And, man, it just fought us every which way. And, you know, it wasn't that far. It was only about an hour and a half drive from Don's house to Martin. And we're halfway there, and Don goes, yeah. He said, this reminds me a lot of – I was in the division hunt, and he said, I was leaving the division, and I had to go to Maple Grove. And he said, I worked all week, and I got everything ready back when he had the Cutlass. And he said, I got all the way to – Pittsburgh, you know, got through Pittsburgh, and he said, I stopped at a rest area at midnight. He said, I only had about 2 hours I could sleep, you know, or I wasn't going to make it there Saturday morning for the cleanup. And he said, he pulled over, and this is before cell phones. This is probably, I don't know, 88, 87. He had an old Econoline van, an open trailer. And he's just dead tired, couldn't drive no more. And he just passed out in the front seat. And he said, next thing he knew, he woke up, and it was 10 o'clock in the morning. He said, I was just so disappointed. You know, I got back on the turnpike. He said, I paid my money. And he, you know, I had to turn right around and just went home. He said, he drove, you know, 7 hours from Lansing one way. He said, just to turn around and drive back home the next day, you know. Never got to Maple Grove or anywhere. So, you know, that stuff happens. But those stories, you know, now, you know, like that story, you know, 30 years later, you can laugh about it.
I know one guy, and I won't out who it is, but he made a 12-hour trip to a points meet. Now, this was pre-internet. This was probably like 2003-ish, pre-internet for a lot of people. And he was a week early for the points meet. Showed up, not one person to the track.
You know, it's funny. I've heard that before. I mean, that used to happen all the time, man. I mean, especially back when the only thing you had was National Dragster, and if something got rained out or changed. I think my dad and Verhines did that when Verhines had the old R stick car. They went to Bristol for some race, and it had gotten rained out because of all the rain, and this is before the Weather Channel. And they're driving through storms, and they're laughing, ah, it's going to get rained out, you know, yada, yada, yada. And next thing you know, they pulled into to Bristol, and there's a big, you know, giant banner that says, you know, rescheduled for 3 weeks later. So, but.
Yeah, crazy things to do for racing. But okay, so back to the baby gators. Now that Charlie, you told your little story, but you know, stuff happens.
Shit happens, buddy. That's all I know.
All right, so in your one day at the baby gators, Charlie, what did you see? What's the scoop?
I mean, you know, not a whole lot. Kind of business as usual. Everybody's bitching about, you know, taking 8 grade points to get in anywhere, but. You know, it's like I told a couple guys, I said, listen, it's been that way for 2 years. I don't understand why you're bitching. I mean, it's not like this is just something that was sprung upon everybody. The car count was a little light, I thought, compared to last year, especially with the class there. I thought, you know, they were down, you know, basically 20 stockers, 20 super stockers. On Thursday when we were there, you know, air wasn't that good. It was kind of really hot, to be honest. It was probably 88, 89. But, you know, it was just kind of, you know, nobody was really, you know, nobody was talking about this virus thing or, you know, what was going on. It was just really kind of low key, to be honest with you. So, I mean, it really... Really just kind of business as usual, especially for Division II. You know, they're kind of their halfway point, you know, having Orlando and South Georgia already done. You know, that's their third race already, so they're, you know, in full swing at that point.
Yeah. Well, I'll quickly go through kind of the winning results of the Baby Gators. Unlike Bell Rose and the two winners of Stock and Super Stock are both former world champions, two guys that are not, definitely been in the winner's circle quite a bit. In Superstock, we had Anthony Bertozzi for the win, and he was 004 in the final. Looks like he was 2 over, scrubbing off probably 7-8 mile an hour. So did a good job. Meryl Scrimshire in the other lane,
looks like he missed the tree a little bit. Had his worst light of the event at 69. But was a couple under, so represent a little bit better than he was. But, you know, not a great race in the final. But Anthony, you know, tough as always. His lights were a little bit lax for him. He's usually, you know, if Anthony's not red, he usually wins. He red lights a lot, very aggressive up front, always. Usually holds a few numbers and can always run the number. But, you know, good as they get, I think he's I don't know, what's the number, Charlie? Mike, 17-time world champ, you know, with IHRA and
NHRA. Yeah, I mean, are we talking IHRA, are we talking NHRA? You know, I mean, Anthony, I don't know anything the guy hasn't won, to be honest. Yeah, that may be his first win since Rodnut left. I mean, he's kind of been a little
He hasn't raced quite as much. He's been a little bit laid back. I know he built a new beach house and spent a lot of time there. But, he's one of the best. You know, Anthony, if you ever see him at the track, he's pretty laid back. And, you know, he'll be staying out of the car when there's, you know, the next pair is in the burnout box. But I tell you, he takes it serious. He does his research. And when he gets – and when he straps that helmet on, when he's pulling into the water, he's one of the toughest out there. So, he was the big winner and the Baby Gators. And that's not the last time we'll talk about him on this podcast. Definitely had a good start to the year. And then on the stock side, we had Randy Wilkes driving – I believe he's driving his old car, right, that is now owned by Scott Lamar.
Yeah, I think Scott bought the car either last year or the year before. Randy kind of retired a little bit, you know, sold his truck trailer. You know, Joey's just kind of doing some engine work and then driving a little bit for Irvin. So Randy kind of goes down there in the wintertime, fishes, kind of hangs out with Scott, runs the car for him. And, you know, Randy's always tough. I mean, world champ. Didn't really crush anything to be honest. I mean, he's 59, 60. Unfortunately, Jerry Bennett was a hog brother in the final. I mean, Jerry had him four on the tree and just, you know, hogged it up, you know, took almost 3.5, 4 at the finish line, a little over four, actually. So
yeah, double breakout, though. Randy was 2 under 2, so may have, you know.
Yeah, but, I mean, Randy's 10-2 following through at 133 miles an hour. I mean, it's not like Randy gives a big jump.
Let's see, what did he go? 119 at 1060. Yeah, that's probably about right. Maybe a touch under.
He had to be out of it a little bit.
A little bit, maybe.
Yeah. I would say Bennett's probably out of it 3 mile an hour a little bit.
Yeah. That's
I bet he wishes that number was probably about 116 mile an hour. He probably would have to sell you.
Yeah, for sure. But, yeah, good race. You know, Jeff Harrington went deep, went down to the semis, always tough. Strickland went deep. Kincaid went pretty deep with his 66 Chevy 2. He always does strong, you know, usually in those first couple races down south, gets off to a good start. But, two well-known names in the final, both won both those races. So that's the eliminator. Now, Charlie and Mike, why don't you guys talk a little bit about the class eliminations, because – that's definitely, Charlie, your focus. So I'll let you kind of lead that discussion.
So, I mean, we can start right off with the big dogs. We'll go Ace Dick. Joe Martinez, he probably ought to go to church. He ran the Swedes first round. And the Swede, you know, he did a great job of screwing up, went 119 under, just about killed the 396, 375 horse aluminum head for anybody with a GM, Camaro, or Nova. That would have really gave it a good screwing against the underrated LS1 stick. Luckily, it was a mineshaft race, and he didn't go 120 under. But Joe Martinez, you know, had a good light in, I want to say,
round one.
Williams outran him by a tenth and a half, and Joe Martin's with the W. Then in the final, you know, Joe's got Keith Bennett, who beat Gary Russell, basically, because Gary red-lighted. So basically the two – you know,
the slower of the four cars, right?
You know, Gary and Joe. Joe may have Gary by a little bit, but, you know, all Keith has to do basically is turn it green because he hooks up, but he red lights. And Joe Martin just fries the tires on the hit, I guess, and runs a 1070. So, really good for Joe. It was his first Gators. Glad to see him get that trophy. But really just, I mean, he did his job, you know, against Williams, you know, not going red, and then just a lot of luck in the final. Next is probably one of my favorite rounds of all times, other than when I was a little kid watching Larry Wilson and Kerry Bogues and Super N Automatic at Indy. I think Larry Wilson was about a 4/10 underdog, and he got to about 64 comb before she left in the Cutlass. But Casey Miles and Donnie Vaught. Donnie Vaught had Casey Miles covered by, just over 4/10, and he was 18 on the tree, and Donnie Vaught was 594. That's 594, ladies. Not the old 594, the new 594.
So we're talking like 5/10.
Yeah, we're talking right. leaving 6/10 on the starting line there. 6/10. Little tough to recover even when you're 4.5/10 to the better and your opponent, you know, really chops the tree down with basically no chance to win, but you know, he's got a 10th, you know, finish line being slower, which is, you know, that one really, I was watching that online just laughing my ass off, to be honest. So, you know, then you go to AA. We'll talk about Tommy Turner. He went 120 under with the 85 Mustang carburetor car to beat Reggie Wilkes. Didn't need to go that fast, but did. Scott Groves and Johnny Gray, man, 956 at 135 in AA. That's a stout number.
Very impressive.
Johnny Gray's stuff is probably, I would put it in the top five, along with Scott Groves and Jimmy Boudreau as far as the 396 club. But a 956 for the air not being killer at almost 136, really, really impressive, I thought. You know, same thing with Barry Parker going a 991 at 118 with that 70 Camaro that looks like a cow. You know, really impressed. Both of those, I guess, are Brian Thielberg motors. So Brian, you know, he's got the Williams car running good with the A-Stick car.
He does Martins as well.
Joe Martins, you know, Scott Grove, Johnny Gray, Barry Parker. So, I mean, he's, you know, if you're willing to spend the money, he's definitely making the power with the 396, 375 horse aluminum, that stuff. He'll roll down the list here. It was something else that caught my eye. Somebody else was really, really lackadaisical on the starting line, too. Who was it? Not to pick on LD. I love LD, but Larry DeForest had a 134 light to Atkinson's 000 and outrun Atkinson by 800s. Just short end of the stick. I mean, you know, Larry's 100 and Jeff's 40. He gets that done, but just, you know, just – the hard luck award kind of, I guess, you know. That's the problem with having somebody covered by 8/10. You lay off a little bit and bite you right in the ass.
Yeah, it's sometimes hard. It's hard to be, like, 60 sometimes.
That's correct, because the problem is you set up for 60 and you're 140 like Larry was. And
yeah.
Then, you know, the other guy, you know, if he's 10, he looks like a hero. And if he's red, well, you know, hell, yeah, he had covered by 800. It's no big deal.
Right, yeah. I had a heads up one time, a long time ago when I first started racing. The guy said, just watch the other guy leave and take off. And I'm telling you right now, that is never a good idea. That is never a good idea, so don't ever do that. What did you see, Mike, that kind of caught your eye?
I guess the one thing that did stick out, and it's more in Superstock, but no Superstock AH cars.
Well, you know, there was three of them down there. I talked to Camilla. He said his stuff's just not ready. They were kind of going to plan to go to Charlotte. He's been working on some stuff, getting the one car ready for the Hemi shootout. He's going to run a comp. And then I did see little Jimmy Daniels and Walkowitz. You know, they stuck in Howes. They stuck their AH cars in comp. Which
right,
he had,
right.
You know, one of the biggest comp fields in Division Two. I think it was, 29 cars at the points meet? Normally,
yeah.
Between 12 and 16, so.
Yeah, it was what, about three AH comp cars, I think.
You know, even if you take those six out, there's still over, you know, 20 regular comp cars, which is a really good showing for comp there, I think.
Yeah. Hey, one thing I did notice, and Charlie, you probably saw this watching class on the live feed, was, you know, AA stock automatic. Johnny Gray, you know, that car left and turned to the center line. I think the same exact thing happened to him last year down there.
He would come out of a wheel stand. You know, his car went right, and he had ended up hitting the wall, I think. That place is it's a little goofy sometimes.
Yeah. But I did notice he was. It seemed to be he was a little bit to the right of the groove, and I think that kind of may have took him to the center line.
Yeah, it seemed like there was quite a few guys that were spinning down there. The track was not great.
Well, I think Joe Martin's first round of an eliminator, I think, same deal. Spun like crazy.
Yeah, and I think it's a national event also. He, you know, after his class victory, it was kind of all downhill for him, unfortunately. The track was, was marginal at best after that, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I will say one of the probably the coolest things I've seen online over the kind of baby gators is somebody posted a video of Gary Russell's car, and I think it was like maybe second round of the Eliminator, but he did a huge wheel stand, like straight up and down, carried that way out, came down, not in the middle of the track, never lifted a beat, and went down and beat the guy. And, for a guy that's in his upper 70s to do that, man, that was cool. And it sounded awesome.
Yeah, that video, if you guys haven't seen that video, like, I don't know if one of the Campolitos or somebody posted it. Really cool, man. You hear that thing, you know, mid-air, bang, second gear, and it just kind of hangs there. Like, it wants to keep going up, but there's just that little bit of a second. Like, is it going to keep climbing or is it going to come down? And, you know, Gary, I mean, what's Gary, 5'5"? You know, I mean, he's
not tall.
That's one of the coolest things to me, you know, growing up around guys like Gary. And I've known Gary my whole life, racing in Division III, is watching him after, like, a run like that. You know, he comes back and he goes to the pits, and, you know, it's him and Kincaid and Joe Martin. And, dude, I don't think you can get that guy down. It don't matter if he wins or loses. If that car is making a good run, he don't care. I mean, he is just, you know, it's what everybody should be, just having fun, happy to be there. I mean, just, you know, grinning from ear to ear after that. So, really good to see Gary having some success and running in the nines with that car. I know him and Tom have worked pretty hard the last 2 years to get that thing to where it's at.
Yeah, that definitely was probably the coolest thing I saw down there. The other thing on the stock side that kind of stuck out to me was the FSB final in Stocklinator. Jeff Strickland won 007, 906, and Philip Langford was 16, 908. So that was one of the closer races of the day. Two-factor cars that I thought that was kind of cool. And then, like you said, A stock automatic, or AA, with those guys going as fast as they did, I thought that was pretty cool, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Super Stock had some good runs, too. You know, Super M first round. You know, Jimmy Carter, he got a big hole shot, and he was the slowest car out of three, and then he comes back to run Dick Lux in the final, and Dick Lux has got him covered by a tenth, and Dick Lux has a 200 light to Carter's 20 or 72, and, you know, squeaks it out by, you know, 2 foot. Ernie Neal going red to Schechter, you know, Ernie had him covered by probably, I would say, a tenth and a half. I mean, there's probably not too many people in the world that Ernie Neal can't outrun in any class. Kind of an upset there.
Yeah, the Tyler B. Shane Oaks was a good race that they they got to do again at the national event about fourth round.
Yeah, I mean, Tyler B.'s got that new Sunfire running good. You know, him and his dad, you know, Chuck had a little tumble, but he seems to be doing a pretty good job crewing, you know, with a bum leg. Yeah, here you go. I mean, Tyler B's 005, Shane Oaks is 008. I mean, they're down there just, you know, nothing you can do. You're 008 and nickel behind, you know, it's in the other guy, you know, you leave second, nothing you can do.
Yeah, so for sure a lot of good races.
We saw the FSDs, you know, Hugh Meeks and Sapuka. Sapuka, one of those guys went 120 under to get those guys horsepower and super stock. So that was the only super stock hit down there.
Your buddy Brad Z, 000 in the bot run.
Yeah, that was nice. You know, we talked about that before I left. You know, Brad Z, we were trying to figure out what class to run with that to stay away from Ernie and everybody else. And ended up, you know, coming away with a single, which is kind of rare anymore, especially with a stick car, because there's normally five guys in the combo, it seems like. Nowicki come close to, you know, there's another battle, the FS Tampa. You know, Nowicki goes 118 under. He's 37. Warford's 113 under 25. So, I mean, coming on him, you know, 940, 920 cars, you know, that's pretty tight down there in the finish line. You know, Nowicki doing a good job of tightening that up not to go 120 under. So, that's really about it for class. I think if there was anything else that kind of stuck out, you know, Bob Dennis was back racing his Cal-A, I saw.
Yeah, I did see that.
That's really, really about it at the points meet. Yeah. You know, nothing else really, you know, everything kind of business as usual. And, you know, I guess we just didn't know that was going to be our last points meet for, you know, 60 days.
Or more.
Or more, yeah.
Okay, so let's get to the national event now. I think, you know, everybody probably knows what happened with the national event. They made the call, I believe, on Thursday, the national event, sometime mid-morning, that the pros would not be running at the national event.
From what I understand, as soon as all the pros got parked, they pretty much pulled the plug on them.
Yeah, so they made the call on that, and obviously that was kind of that first weekend. You know, NBA games are getting canceled, Major League Baseball. I mean, it was kind of all happening very quickly. I think, you know, in hindsight, NHRA did the right thing. You know, at a track like Gainesville, that's a highly attended race, and you know, there was going to be a lot of people. Obviously, it really sucked for the fans. You know, it sucked for all the guys that had traveled so far and the pros and all the money spent. But in hindsight, with what we know now and kind of how this disease is ramped up, or virus, you know, probably the right thing to do, but definitely inconvenient, I think, for a lot of people. I think the good thing is that they still let the sportsmen run. You know, there wasn't a lot of fans. It was kind of spread out. They did it in a much condensed schedule. I think they time trials Thursday, finished the race on Friday, and, you know, it was a pretty early finish, I believe, as well.
I think the way they handled that, I think they at the real bright spot for NHRA with the sportsmen. What do you think, Charlie? I mean, they could have just turned up, packed everybody up, and sent them out the door, but
I think they would have had a mutiny on their hands. I think there's a few guys there that if they would have sat there all week and they would have said, we're not going to run you guys, you know, in a condensed form because they didn't let fans in. Everybody that was already there had been there for the week most of the time.
Yep.
It was definitely the right call. I think, you know, everybody's like, oh, it sends a bad message. You know, they don't care about the sportsmen because they ran them off. And, you know, let's face it, I mean, a lot of those guys, you know, let's take Gary Russell, for example. Those guys were there since Tuesday the week before. You know, him and Kincaid, Jim Marshall, you know, Jimmy Roberts. Those guys, you know, they've been there. I mean, everybody's been in contact with everybody anyway. So, I mean, anybody's in there, if one guy had it, they're all going to have it anyways at that point, in my opinion. I think it was the right call to get it done, you know, in 2 days. You know, I don't think, you know, people that weren't there, they can say, oh, look at that, man. They ran the sportsmen. NHRA doesn't give a shit about them. You know, they could have got viruses or this or that and the other. You know, I think it would have been way worse to tell those guys, yeah, you've been here all week. Get out of here. We'll tell you when you can come back. You know?
Yeah.
So that's
it. It was good. I think it was a good way to go into all this, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too, because now, I mean, let's face it, you know, we're looking, you know, more than likely 5-6 national events are going to get canceled. You know.
At least, yeah.
That's got, you know, serious world championship points implications for not only the pros, but sportsmen if they don't recover them. You know, if you're a traveling professional and let's say you live in Division II, and now let's say they cancel Gainesville and Atlanta and Charlotte.
Charlotte, yeah.
Buddy, you got to travel to Indy, which is not that great of a place to try to win a national event with all that's going on there and qualify. Or you got to go to Virginia, which will take a lot of grading points. Or you got to go to St. Louis, or you got to go to Dallas. You know, so we'll see how it plays out. It was definitely the right call, but, you know, time will tell what's going to happen. I see NHRA definitely making up that Gator Nationals because it's an NHRA-owned track. After that, who knows? You know, if they make up that one or they make up half of them, you know.
I think the other thing they did was pretty cool. They actually made the NHRA TV. They still filmed the whole thing. It was on TV, and they made it free. So you didn't have to have a subscription, but you could watch the whole race. So that was pretty cool, and I definitely took advantage of that. And as I was working, kind of had it up on my other screen and kind of listened/watched it all day.
Yeah, I mean, not to get off subject, but I mean that's another thing guys are, you know, kind of hitting around talking about, you know, with you know, credits. You know, Charlotte's probably going to get canceled now. You know, if you
yep.
can't get in, you know, credits normally last for a year. I mean, what are they going to do there? Are they going to go to a 2-year deal on credits now? You know, are they going to go to the same 1 year? And, you know, if you lose it, you lose it. There's a lot of unanswered questions, you know. I mean, what about the guys that have paid for that NHRA All Access a year in advance if they don't make up 6 races? You know, are they going to get 6 races next year for free? Or, you know, just a lot of unanswered questions.
Yeah, and I think luckily most people are being kind of understanding with what's going on. And you know, some of these questions are just no good answers, you know. So, but yeah, let's get back to Gators. I watched, you know, the race, and this national event, it was very different than most national events. Most national events are kind of spread out over 3 and 4 days. But kind of like I believe Mike said, you know, kind of back at the combo races, when you run a bunch of rounds right in a row with not a lot of stuff in between, you end up getting some really tight. It's a different type of race, right? It's different. You know, it made for some really good racing across the board. You know, I'll talk about super stock and let you guys do stock. Let's do it that. You know, Anthony Bertozzi, made his way all the way to the final again, back-to-back weeks, and was actually also in the top dragster final. And ended up actually getting runner-up in both. He went red in Superstock. And David Latino ended up winning the Superstock. So he was driving really good all day. Had a couple really good rounds, but was just solid teen and 20 most of the day on the tree, 00. Man, just some really good rounds if you kind of look through the results. For example, David Latino in round 3 was 004 and left second. You know, Ed Longahaney was 003 and 2 above and sent packing. So, you know, just some great rounds throughout the day, some really tight racing. You know, David Latino was able to pull out the win versus Anthony when he went red in the final. Now, David, it was 50. In the final, which was, I don't know if the nerves got to him a little bit or something, but I was able to get away with it when Anthony turned it red, leaving about 6/10 behind him. And I think when you talk about stock, Mike, you might have a similar story.
Well, yeah, you know, I think what's interesting, you know, Latino, I mean, he earned every round that he won, you know, in super stock. But then you flip it over to stock. The classic case, when it is your day, it is your day. Round one, you know, round 1, 2, 3. So first round, he had a red in the other lane. Second round, he had a red in the other lane. Third round, he had a bye. Fourth round, he had a red in the other lane. Semis, he was good. I mean, it was a good race. He was 20 on three. His 52 package beat the 61 package. And then, you know, in the final, Argana was red. So, I mean, he was good, but man, this is a classic case. When it's your day, it's your day.
Yeah. One other thing I thought was a little bit interesting in stock is, you know, David Cena has a Corvette LS1 car, and he is from, you know, him and Slate and Britt Cummings, they all kind of, you know, go together, travel together. They're all good friends, and they all have more or less the exact same stockers, right? And in round 4, all 3 of them were still in. And I was watching it, and they would all come up like back to back to back every round. And it was just kind of funny that they were all kind of kept winning together. And then in the semis, they actually had to face off. David Latino took out Britt Cummings.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think, you know, and so Aragon, runner-up. 68 first round. The other guy was had a bad light. Second round, he was late. Had 105 light, but Foley – was late too, and he had some issues. Round 3, he stepped it up, 009. a double breakout, but he was just, you know, one under. Round four, again, sharp, 16 light. Semis had 12 light. And then the final, you know, he went red. But it was definitely Latino's day.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, seemed like a really good racing. Yeah, a little lackluster, no crowds, didn't look quite crazy. You know, winner circle celebration or anything like that. But, you know, becomes one of the many drivers to double up, winning two national events. So congrats to Dave Latino and, you know, kind of all that Louisiana family.
Yeah, I tell you,
obviously,
honorable mention, George Warren with a stock on a 67 fairing. His lights, round one, 009, round two, 005, round three, 001. Round four, 14. Round five, 009. And then finally lost with a 65 light. But anyway, he was red, 009.
Yeah,
so.
I do remember that. Yeah, I remember watching that. That was pretty awesome to see him.
I mean, a string of lights like that. Wow. Anyway.
Yeah. And in a kind of unique car, you know? You don't see too many of those cars. All right, so that about wraps it up. Charlie, there's two subjects that we missed on our list here, and I'm going to let you give your take on both. So you ready?
Fire away. What's the first one?
Don't fall asleep. Richie Mace, our buddy Richie Mace, GQ at the Gators.
Well, our friend Richie Mace, which we all love to death. I love Richard. You know, he'll be on the podcast sometime, I'm sure, to explain himself. He was disqualified after running 118 under with his the corn dog mobile that he bought from Marion Stevenson. He was found to have a technical infraction afterwards, and he was disqualified from the Gator Nationals. So, Richard, you know, Richard had a throttle body infraction. It was something to do. I don't know if it was a wedge, you know, like the LT1 guys used to have, if he had one of those in there. Or what it was, but it was some kind of a minor infraction. It was only a one race suspension, so he'll be back after that.
Okay, so Richie Mace, we'll give you some chance to explain yourself sometimes, but not too bad. Didn't only got one race, must not have been that serious.
Yeah, I'm not going to throw Rich under the bus. You know, he drives that bus all the time, and you know he can probably do a good job of doing that himself without me, you know, operating. So, but anyway, on a positive note for Richie, I will say his comp car run real good first round. I thought he was going to win with 60 under, you know, left good. So they got the comp. He's been fighting that since Vegas last fall. So I will give Richie a shout out on that, man. He's got the comp car running good. It looks like it's firing on all eight cylinders again. Him and his guys, man, they've had converters and transes and cylinder heads and wiring. They fought a grim one on that thing the last 6 months, so good to see that kind of coming around, even when he had a little minor technical difficulty with a stocker.
Yeah, and we should get Richie on the podcast, because he does have some stories, let me tell you. And if half of them are true,
I'm going to tell you one of them real quick. Richard Mace is the only guy I know can break into a national championship football game with no ticket. I mean, Craig Marshall told me one time they were at the Ohio State game somewhere up in Jacksonville or Orlando, and Richie Mace called him and said, "Where you at?" Craig says, "Oh, we're partying at the Buckeye game. We're in seat, you know, whatever." Richie says, "Well, I'm coming to see you." And Craig goes, "Richard, you got tickets?" He goes, "Oh, no, man, I ain't got no tickets." Craig says, "You ain't getting in here, dude. It's sold out." Richard goes, "I'll see you in 45 minutes, you know." Craig goes, "Man, all of a sudden we're watching this football game, and here comes Richard Mace up the goddamn steps for about 3 minutes and a half, and the security came and got him a puff." but Craig goes, "Man, he got all the way up there. That was pretty amazing." So, but
yeah,
Richie's a great guy, man. Got him in his bag. Got a bunch of stories. You know, been diehard stock superstock guys. Now moving into comp a little bit. Yeah.
I thought you were going to tell a story of when he blew his motor up at Gainesville Thursday night, drove home, and was back in the morning with another motor in his car, And we said, Richie, oh, you went home and put the spare motor in. He said, no, we went home and built a motor from scratch.
Yeah, I mean, he's really an amazing specimen when you sit back and really look at all the stuff. I've known Rich about 20 years from the IHRA days when him and Mike Mayhew were running around in the trailer, Tropical Thunder. Remember that POS they had?
Oh, yeah.
They bought this trailer. I don't know if it was on a set or something, but the trailer said Tropical Thunder on the side. It was one of the biggest POSs known to man. I wouldn't, you know, you need a tetanus shot before you rolled in it.
And they had those old couches in there, remember?
Oh, yeah, dude. These guys went to every Canada, all the national events. I mean, they were partying with you know, old man Vanny was still alive and all that. You know, just having a great time. And that's how I knew Richard, is he was leaving his stuff up in Detroit. You know, I guess we'll tell one more story about Richie and then we'll let it go. But he's standing up with my dad about 15 years ago, him and the generator guy, Gino. And Gino's brother, Dano, they had a Jeep. And they parked this Jeep at the airport. And Richie goes, Bob, you got to take me to the airport. I got to get this Jeep, you know. And my dad goes, where's it at? What lot's it in? Richard goes, I don't know. My dad said, there's like 15 or 20 lots at the airport. I mean, there's international, there's quick ride parking lots. My dad's like, where did Gino park this thing? And Richard's like, well, you said he just parked it at the airport, man. You know, I don't know. So my dad goes, no bullshit. They drive up there, and my dad's got a five-year-old Impala at that time. And they ain't in the parking lot 3 seconds, my dad said. And Richard goes, there's the Jeep. You know, he had it parked somewhere out by the road by the grace of God. He jumps at the stop sign. He jumps out of the car. And this is about probably 6 years after 9/11. And he, you know, monkey climbs right up this fence and shimmies over the top. Right? Well, the security guard sees him. And they detain him and this and that. And he's trying to tell them that that's his Jeep. And, you know, they're asking him all these questions. And my dad says, next thing you know, man, here 3 minutes later, here's Richard Mace driving out the gate in his Jeep, man. He said, anybody else, they would have taken him to jail. Or, you know, we wouldn't have found the thing for 2 days. I mean, but that's Richard, man. I mean, so. But he's got, you know, 50 stories like that, you know, that I know of.
All right, so Richard Mace, number one. Number two thing we missed, Charlie, and I want both you and Mike's take on this, but I believe it was in the quarters or semifinals at Belrose, there was an unfortunate incident on the track. Ashton Hudson, who's got a really fast, or had a really fast, you know, comp car, you know, was trying to kill Smindex, was way out in front. I believe he had some carbon fiber brakes, but ended up locking the car up, you know, just past the finish line, ended up wrecking the car pretty bad. And was, at the time, racing Brad Plurd, who's also got a very fast comp car. And, you know, Austin wrecked and did not go across the scales, wasn't able to. They took the car off on a rollback and didn't go across the scales, didn't do a fuel check or anything like that. And you know, there was some argument that Brad should be put back in because that was going to the final round, right?
This is a really simple argument.
I mean, yep.
It shouldn't even be an argument. You know, if you crash your car, whether it's excessive braking or your shit breaks or whatever, and you crash your car, you're out. Really simple. The guy that shit's not fucking in the wall or ate up gets reinstated, whether he was the winner or not. I mean, Craig Hutchinson, the Division 4 director, which I think he still is, did a shit job. End of story. You know, that's a really cut case, you know, cut and dry. I mean, Brad Pillard took a good screwing on that deal. He didn't do anything wrong. You know, whether Hutchie, you know, slammed the brakes, didn't slam the brakes, brake locked up, he was not in control of his car. Cut and dry. You know.
And I believe what's in the actual rule book, it's division director's discretion, correct?
Correct. And this is what's bullshit here, because that was for the pie run, and I'm not saying this had anything to do with it, but looking at the facts, you can't say it didn't have anything to do with it. there was no runner-up final round money paid out at that race. So does that have something to do with it? Does it not? Because, you know, you have to turn on the winner light to get the semifinal and the runner-up, you know, to get the runner-up money. You know, Jason Cohn ran into that years ago up at Central. You know, he had a buy run in the third round and, you know, grenaded his car in the burnout box on a double buy run, you know. So,
So what's the rule? I mean,
it's up to the division director. I mean, here's what's crazy about this rule is let's take this incident where a guy wrecks his car, and let's go back to Division III 2 years ago with Bruce Castle, who had a brake malfunction. He had an actual, you know, caliper that seized up. He doesn't race that way. You know, the division director threw him out. He had an actual mechanical problem. And the division director threw him out and reinstated, you know, Austin Alvey, who was racing him. You know, I don't know if how can you make that call and then come and not make the other call here in this race? That's my question to the division director. It should be really simple.
If you hit the wall, if you hit the outside wall, is that like crossing the center line?
It depends on when you hit it.
You're right.
Or the finish line, you're automatically eliminated. But if you hit it after the finish line, it's like a freebie. It can be like a freebie, I should say. Same thing with the pros. You know, if you go across the finish line under fire and you win, and then after the finish line you smoke the wall, you still win.
Right.
So it's kind of a gray area, and it's an issue that's needed to be addressed for many years. NHRA doesn't want to address it. You know, I've said for years, you know, you light the tires up and smoke the tires from the brakes, you're out. You know, it's really simple. It's a safety issue. A lot of guys will argue with me on that. Says, well, I'm still under control of my car, this, that, the other. But, you know, it's pretty cut and dry to me. You know, don't stab the brakes. Therefore, if you don't stab the brakes, you don't lose control of your car. It doesn't end up in the wall. Real simple.
Hey, I want to throw one out on the table just real quick. Hopefully it doesn't go too long. Is this racing pause and some of the hardships that make great, is this gonna change the whole eight grading point thing? And
I think it's all gonna depend on what happens with these jobs. You know, if we go 2 months, 2.5 months, and people are laid off 2.5 months, you're gonna see it take 3-4 grading points to get into this stuff. If this goes another 3 weeks and we start to see an increase in stuff and people aren't laid off that long, you know, it probably won't have as big an effect. You know, if the government freezes mortgages and auto loans, you know, for 2 months and people can spend this money on, you know, food and other stuff, you know, it's all going to depend on if people pay their bills or not at the end of the day.
I think this
more than anything else.
I think some reschedules may open up some spots too. Just kind of, remember when Norwalk last year, that the Monday before a bunch of spots opened up?
Yep.
You know, and you know, are, you know, these races, are they going to run are they all going to be 3-day national events, and they're going to run the pros differently, or, you know?
That's the thing.
You know, when they reschedule these races, are they going to run the sportsmen with the pros? You know, or are they going to do, you know, are they going to go, like, let's say Charlotte, for example, and try to run the sportsman at one of the national events, or the
National Opens.
You know, National Opens even, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
they could
do like it did Norwalk last year, you know, and, you know, it's from the pro standpoint, it's a lot easier, it's a lot quicker, and it could be a possibility.
I think my answer to that would be
on Wednesday and Thursday during the week.
Yeah, my answer to that would be, okay, so say, let's just assume it's June 1st. That's what we've kind of heard through the grapevine. And that's what some of the other, you know, sports are going to and things like that, right? So if we go June 1st, that means Virginia's canceled. That means Atlanta's canceled and Charlotte. Houston and Las Vegas and Gainesville. So that's 1, 2, 3. That's 6 national events. I doubt they can reschedule all 6, right? Because if you just look at the schedule, it just doesn't fit. You know, from the Western swing on, it's a pretty busy schedule, and in the fall, it's like back to back to back to back to back.
Right.
So if they just get rid of those 6 races, just throw this out there. you know, and saying it's just June 1st, I think Bristol takes eight to get into, just because there's all those guys that have eight great points that already paid to get in those other races.
Yeah.
Plus, there's going to be some guys that want to go. You know, Norwalk, I could see it take a ton. But to say that it won't have an effect on the economy, man, I mean, just looking at the stock market, looking at, you know, I think like Charlie said, it depends how long this whole deal goes out. I mean, you know, we're here in Ohio in a stay-at-home order. You guys are in Michigan as well. I think that will continue across the country and other states. You know, how long will that last? Will that get worse? Will it get more locked down? I mean, you know, Charlie and I were talking about this pre-podcast, about some of these companies that have sent out these just, you know, Charlie and I are kind of in the performance, you know, tools, automotive aftermarket business. And Mike, you obviously spent your career there as well. But I just think it's hilarious. Some of these performance companies that have sent out these emails saying, we are deemed crucial to the United States and the economy, and we are staying open. And it's like, okay, maybe, yeah, you're an automotive company, so you fit the bill. But saying that you're deemed, you know, critical, and Charlie even read an email that he had seen from a company that basically said that, you know, because, you know, 0.1% of their business was something somewhat healthcare related, they were staying open and having all their employees come to work. So, you know, I think some of that might change. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, hats off to companies like, you know, I saw Craig Liberty and those guys, you know, they closed down. They didn't, you know, try to put people to work, you know, where they could have maybe, because I know Craig does some stuff. You know, same thing with a couple other companies. You know, I know a couple of piston companies, they make some stuff for, you know, the automotive and this and that. And there was probably a loophole where those guys could have stayed open, and they just said, you know, morally and ethically, you know, we have a responsibility to our employees to try to keep everybody safe. And that's what our goal is, you know. So it's, you know, it's good to see a lot of these companies, you know, say, hey, yeah, we probably could have, you know, tried to stay open to this. But, you know, morally we have a responsibility to keep our employees, you know, safe at all times.
I think that was great question, Mike. I think it's very much how everybody in the country feels, and the things that you're talking about at your dinner table, that sort of thing. But, you know, just everybody do your part. Stay home, clean your race car. Be like Jeff Donna and, you know, clean your garages and get ready for when we come back racing, because we will come back racing and it's going to be fun. I can't wait. But in the meantime, listen to the podcast, catch up on some old episodes. This is episode 27. So if you haven't listened to them all, you're definitely going to have some time on your hands, I think. You know, watch in the next week or so with the Cal Method podcast come out and talk to Mike and hear a little bit more about it tonight. I'm definitely excited to listen to that one.
Yeah, exactly. And don't forget, you know, I'm going to get a little political here. Don't forget, you know, the Democrats canceled that stimulus plan for all of us. You know, so that was money we could have used to go racing or whatever. So November, remember Nancy Pelosi and those guys, you know, they canceled the stimulus plan that could have really helped out the economy. So I'll leave you all with that.
Mike, perfect, any Charlie. Last words? Last words,
no,
Mike?
No, I'll leave it with Charlie.
All right, as always. Thanks, guys. Have a great night. And
right. Sounds good, man. We'll be in touch.
That concludes the Class Racing Podcast. Please remember to visit racetoolsdirect.com for all of your tools and equipment needs.